flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, let's roll. It's the Hoffman Show on a Football Friday here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And man, what a show we have for you. We got Nick Bumgardner joining us in about 12 minutes. He is the Detroit Lions writer for The Athletic. We have Mike Mayock again this week. He joined us last week. Why mess with the formula? He's calling the game. Let's have Mike on. Let's talk about it. Coming up at 4:30. John Kime, 5 o'clock. Mike Jones, 5:30. Our pick 6 at 6. And Logan Paulson will give you his thoughts on this Detroit offensive line and what the Commanders can do to stifle one of the best run games in the league coming up at 6:30. So basically, wherever you are right now, you might be driving home. You might not be able to just sit in your car for 3 hours. But the good news is this show is available on demand. And it's also available on multiple platforms. Of course, the Odyssey app. You can watch us on YouTube. And if you have to, you know, go live your life on a Friday night, then you can listen on demand tomorrow on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So I'm just letting you know up front, this one's a good one. There's a lot coming. And you're going to want to listen to all of it before 8:15 tomorrow night. That, of course, is when the Commanders will take on the Detroit Lions, their first divisional playoff matchup in a long, long time since 2005. Of course, last time they lost in the divisional round. They've actually lost their last 3 divisional round playoff games going back to 1991. They won more than just the divisional round that year. They won the Super Bowl. Detroit comes in 15-2. You likely knew that. Washington 13-5, counting the playoff win last week. And as we take a look at the matchup here, I think it's important to just point out, this will be an upset if Washington wins. That does not mean they can't win. This is a Commanders team that is led by the best quarterback in the conference. And that is a good place to be if you are a football team fighting for a Super Bowl berth. Hey, we got the best quarterback. That should help us get pretty close. But if you go down the list, points per game. Washington, excellent. 5th best scoring offense in the league. They're a solid 5 points behind the Lions. 28.5 to 33.2. Point differential. Commanders, a very respectable 10th best. They were plus 94 on the year. They blew out a couple of teams. Won a bunch of close games. Lions blew out a couple of teams. Won a bunch of close games. They just won more. And they had more blowouts. They're plus 222 on the year. That's first. Commanders, last week we highlighted the Bucs actually had a sub-500 record in close games. And they hadn't played in as many of them as Washington. Washington 8-4, now 9-4 in close games. Detroit is 7-2 in close games this year. So, yes, their only 2 losses were close. They didn't get blown out by anyone. but they have won a ton of close games. They're winning by an average of 15.5 points per game. They're plus 9 in turnover differential. Washington was just plus 1 on the season. And they're even, you know, despite their reputation, especially as of late and how they are on defense, they are penalized less than Washington. They committed 4 fewer penalties, which is the difference between being 12th and 18th on the season. Washington 18th, Detroit 12th, because offensively they play very clean football, even if they're very aggressive defensively. If you look at on the NFL Pro Next Gen Stats matchup comparison, it's not pretty for Washington, but it's also not heinous when you start to get into some of these specifics. They give Detroit a slight advantage when it comes to the Lions defense against the Commanders passing offense. That is how good the Detroit pass defense has been purely against the pass. There's a huge caveat that I'm going to get to in a second, which is probably Washington's best chance to win this game. The Lions were 5th overall in pass efficiency defensively this year. And I'll put some more context on that in a second, because I actually don't think they're that good on as they are on paper on film. But overall rushing efficiency, Washington was 3rd on the season and Detroit was just 15th. It is a 4-star out of 5 advantage for the Washington Commanders. And that is, I think, the area where Washington can win this game. But it's not from the running back run game. Detroit was bad this year against quarterback scrambles. And I think that's an area, and frankly, some design quarterback runs got them too. I think that is an area where Jaden Daniels can go and be a playmaker. Like, I think this could look similar statistically in a lot of ways to the Atlanta game, where it's like, hey man, biggest game of the year, everything's on the line. We're just going to put the ball in your hands and say go. And some of that might be, you know, designed rollouts and things like that. And if guys are open, he'll throw it. If not, hey, we're fine with him running. I'm not going to call a ton of pure design run, although there will be probably 4 or 5 of them, but we're going to give him a bunch of run pass options. And when I say that, I don't mean literally RPOs, although those will be in the game plan too. But let's give Jaden Daniels some run pass options where he gets out on the edge. There's not really a check down, and the check down is he takes off and runs. I think that is a big part of how Washington can and should be looking to find success this weekend against Detroit. Pressure rate, Commanders were 10th best in protection, Lions 12th best on rushing the passer, and they really struggled to do that after Aiden Hutchinson went out back early, I think it was week 6, but they blitz like crazy, so you have to be on your toes even if the blitzing is only so effective. Of course, when you flip the other side of the ball, things get a little sideways. Overall passing efficiency, the Lions were 2nd in the NFL this year. The Commanders defense, 23rd. That is a 5-star advantage per NFL Pro and Next Gen Stats. Overall rushing efficiency, Lions were actually only 7th, but we know that they are incredibly effective. I got a big number for you on that in a second. And then Commanders defense was 13th. Pressure rate, Detroit 15th best in terms of protecting the passer. Commanders 19th best at getting after the passer, according to their numbers. So on paper, obviously, the Lions are favored. But some of these numbers require the context of, for instance, their Lions efficiency as a pass defense. They often are playing in known passing situations based off the score. They have consistently been up on teams. And so, okay, now my play action pass defense is going to be a lot better, for instance, because I'm not falling for run fakes. Go ahead, run the football. We're up 30-13 and it's the middle of the third quarter. Your play action fake doesn't do anything to me. Now, watching them on tape and seeing how they are in the first quarter, they will fly after running backs off play action. I do think that is an area where Washington can be effective. And I think that also comes into play in the RPO game. Hey, if I'm going to fake this handoff and I'm going to ride this handoff out and then pull the ball out the last second and throw it, as long as my offensive lineman doesn't get down the field, that could be a potential big gainer for Washington, because it's basically impossible to cover man-to-man. Like, slants are really hard if you don't have help in the middle of the field because you're afraid of getting beat to the outside up the sideline in man-to-man. It's why if you ever go to a training camp and teams do one-on-ones, if you want to see a wide receiver be a tool bag, watch him run a slant. That's not really how those are supposed to go, because it's like, yeah, congrats, you caught it. You technically won the route, but you would have gotten your head taken off by a middle linebacker or a safety. It's a one-on-one drill. Of course you should win, especially if you go inside. But on an RPO, if you read it out correctly, then that linebacker pulls down into the hole, chases the run, and that guy, it actually is the one-on-one drill without the linebacker help. And Terry got two of those last week, one of which was called back because Andrew Wiley actually did too good of a job getting to the second level and was up there before Jaden threw the ball, and they picked up an illegal man downfield penalty. Now, on the other side of it, talk about a team that runs the ball effectively and uses play action effectively. The Detroit Lions offense ran the ball out from under center more times this year than anybody else, and was way more effective than anybody else. The Lions gained 1,801 yards on design runs from under center this season. Actually, before I even go further reading this stat, I want to check something real quick. NFL.com stats, team stats. How many teams didn't rush for that many yards total this season? We're talking about 1,800 yards in the regular season. You had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 teams in the NFL did not rush total for more yards than the Lions did purely from under center. They had over 400 more than the next closest offense. So, amongst the many matchups that we'll continue to talk about today, whose linebackers can play better fitting the runs, but also getting underneath those second layer throws, those second level throws, where guys like St. Brown and Laporta kill opposing offenses, where guys like Terry can get in there, Zach Ertz can get in there and be playmakers? That's one of the key matchups to watch coming up this weekend. We'll get into a lot more of the matchups as we go, including next with our guy Nick Bumgardner of The Athletic. Can the Commanders actually, and should the Commanders actually try to make this game a shootout? Is that their best chance of winning? Sounds counterintuitive with how explosive Detroit's offense is. But let's talk about that with Nick, who has a hypothesis. Next, before Mike Mayock joins us, coming up at 4:30 on the Team 980.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we do stream live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Mike Mayock joins us again because he's got a Commanders playoff game again on Westwood One on the radio. But right now we're joined by Nick Bumgardner from The Athletic. Great to have Nick back on the show. And the last time that we chatted, my friend, we were on Radio Row in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine debating on what the Commanders should do with the number two overall pick. Seems like they did okay, huh?
Yeah, they did. And I tell you, I think I probably told you I wouldn't have drafted Jaden Daniels and I would have been fired or ran out of town. Like, they have done more than okay. This to me has been, and you guys know this, it's been one of the best stories in the NFL this season. Dan Quinn was, you know, I think the rap, because it happened at an awkward, you know, Ben Johnson turning them down awkwardly and then they pivoted to him, but Dan Quinn was the perfect hire. Kingsbury was the perfect OC for Jaden. And, you know, Jaden was more ready for this than I think I thought he was. I think that that was the one thing that I probably didn't give it enough credit for, is like, he was so calm in college. And I was just like, you know, you don't know if that's going to translate. And it absolutely has. He's been fantastic.
No doubt. I think a lot of people thought he could do some of this stuff eventually, but doing it now is the surprise. I thought that was well put. We had Mark Ross on the show yesterday, former executive in the league, now with NFL Network, and he put it that way. I was like, yes, that Mark. Yep. By the way, Nick not only does NFL draft coverage for The Athletic, but is one of their Lions writers and reporters as well. So perfect guy to have on and talk about this game. The Johnson, since you hit on that, let's talk about the Johnson element of this real quick, because Commanders fans definitely haven't forgotten how that went down.
And,
the way that it did go down, was awkward to say the least. I also don't know that he would have gotten the job if he hadn't pulled himself out. Like, I think Quinn was the favorite, and that might have actually had something to do with Ben Johnson pulling himself out. But what has been the story? Like, has that been a story at all up there this week?
Not so much. And I think it hasn't just because he's been able to sort of like up the ante for himself. Like, he's even a bigger candidate now and they've had a better season. But it is something that gets brought up because there's still conversations about, would he do this again? Would he like come back to Detroit again if he doesn't like the situation? And the more I've sort of gone over the Washington thing in my head, I look back and think to myself, because Ben Johnson, I really thought last year, really wanted to stay in Detroit. That was his like, I want to finish this as best we can. I think if he'd have gone and finished the interviews with Washington, I think he would have liked it way too much with Adam Peters. And I think he would have really, really liked the situation and been more torn than he was ready to be torn. And like you said, maybe Dan Quinn was also, a factor in there. And he was like, look, I don't want to get my hopes up for something and then have to make a bad decision. I think he was just like, let me pull back and, whatever. But I don't think it was a case of like, Washington's a crap job. And I think Ben's just kind of an awkward guy. I think that it came out weird, but I think he really actually would have loved that job and would have, as we've seen now. I mean, I think it would have probably been, who knows? It might have not have been a good fit.
It's a lot better of an opportunity than certainly the ones he's looking at now. The Raiders job is a super interesting one, especially if he pulls a guy, Lance Newmark, back out of the Washington front office. Yep. A lot of rumors that those two are going to wind up going somewhere together with Lance as the general manager. So we'll see what kind of rating of staffs happens both there and
for
here
sure,
if Johnson takes a head coaching job. But there's a pretty important game this weekend to talk about first. And this Detroit defense, I think, is so interesting. They had such a great performance in week 18. The couple weeks prior to that were not nearly as good. We know about the injuries, and this is one of the best challenges they probably faced all year. One of the most unique ones with Jaden's dual threat ability. How do you think that they match up both in some of the choices they'll make schematically and just personnel wise, how they match up with this Washington offense?
Yeah, this is really a tough one for them because, they do play a lot of man coverage, as everyone knows. They like the pressure and all that sort of thing. And that stuff doesn't bug Jaden Daniels, I don't think, as much, and especially a runner. When you're in man coverage, it's hard to tackle a running quarterback, especially a guy who comes at you as fast as he does. So I think it's going to be a challenge. They're not going to be able to do the same thing that they did to Sam Darnold, who is athletic, but it's not even close to this. It's going to have to be a situation where you hope that you can hang in long enough to where he makes a rookie mistake or two, and then you can take advantage. The one thing that the Lions defense has been very good at, as they've sort of like had all these guys get injured, is if somebody gives a, puts a ball up in the air, they pick it. There's not a lot of dropped interceptions or mistakes or, things like that in those moments. So that's how they play defense right now. It's a lot of opportunistic stuff, but Daniels presents is something that, like you said, unique. They have not seen this. They've struggled with Philly and Jalen Hurts in the past, this is a different deal. So the closest they've seen was Anthony Richardson, and he's not even on the dance floor with Jaden. So this will be
He had a nice game rushing in that game, of course. They got up, and so it didn't matter. The other thing that I do think is interesting about this matchup with Jaden and this Lions defense, because the commenters back and forth on whether it's Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, like the fans are chirping this week, as you would imagine. And it's like, oh, yeah, sure, man-to-man coverage, Terry McLaurin, they put it up, Kirby Joseph will go get it. Jaden Daniels this season, according to Pro Football Focus, has 12 turnover-worthy throws season in now 18 games, 12. So the opportunities that you would think exist for a rookie quarterback against, if you're the Lions, like, it's a rookie, he's going to throw it to us. I think Jared Goff is far more likely to give Washington's defense opportunities than Jaden is on the other end of it, based off this entire season and kind of who they've been as professional quarterbacks. And that's no slight on Jared. Jared's fantastic.
Well, he takes more chances, for sure.
He takes a lot more chances, and Jaden just has a way of protecting the football. If they don't get those turnovers, like, I don't say, can they win? Because their offense could score 50. Like, that's right. How it goes. But, like, can they get stops without turnovers, I guess would be the question, Nick.
It's going to be really hard because it's hard for them, I think, when Washington's wanting to play fast, if Washington can handle the crowd and all that sort of stuff and play fast. If they're losing on first down, they are in trouble. If it's second and manageable for another offense, it's big. It's trouble, you know, and it becomes a situation like we saw when they played Buffalo of, you know, they couldn't get that turnover and it just became, well, maybe we can like make them go 12 plays before they score a touchdown, you know, and waste more time or whatever. Like, I think that's sort of how they were approaching it in some ways. But yeah, it just boils down to a shootout. Like, they, if they can't get stops or they can't make you, you know, make mistakes, or it can even be a mistake where, you know, maybe they miss a read, he takes a bad sack, and suddenly you got to, you know, punt in a situation where you didn't want to. Like, stuff like that, if they can't come up with opportunities on mistakes like that, it's really hard for them to win. It's really hard for them to, I'm sorry, it's hard for them to stay in the level to keep the offense from having to have any breaks, because the offense has to be perfect.
Nick Baumgartner with us from The Athletic here on The Hoffman Show. The waste time thing and like make them go long drives.
Yeah, right.
I want to touch on that real quick before I get to this Detroit offense, because that was a huge facet of Washington's win over Tampa. They controlled the ball. It was over 35 minutes a clock. They had, I think it was five drives of 10 plus plays, which is only like the eighth time since 2000 in a playoff game that's happened. Like, and that's the best way to keep Tampa's offense off the field. It's the best way to keep Detroit's offense off the field.
Exactly.
So is that actually something that if Aaron Glenn is looking at, like, is he going to want to kind of force Washington to be more aggressive? Is actually challenging them for longer drives counter to Detroit winning the game? Because they probably want the track meet in a way that, like, Washington can run and all.
Yeah.
But, like, it's kind of like getting in a track meet with the 2017 Golden State Warriors. You might think that you can get in a track meet, but good luck keeping up with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and, exactly, and those boys.
I don't think you want to get into a super fast, because Washington can play faster than Detroit, and Detroit can score, but it takes Detroit a little more time sometimes. There's not a lot of quick hit deals, and they don't play with the type of pace and speed. So I almost feel like, in a way, you're hoping for just true stops. But I think, you know, one thing Aaron Glenn's defense does a great job at, and he's a great coach, he does a terrific job coaching this stuff, is red zone defense in tight, inside the 10 or the, you know, 11, whatever it is. They are insanely difficult because they're physical. They play right on the edge of getting a flag thrown as they play man coverage all game. And as we saw against Minnesota, it's really difficult to finish with touchdowns against them in those situations. So in some ways, it's a tricky one. This is a really fascinating matchup. I feel like the team that gets the upper hand early will be able to dictate how this goes. But you don't want to be on your back foot here. And for Detroit, it would be having to just play, you know, at a breakneck pace. You don't want to do that. That's how they did it against Buffalo, and it was a close game and score, but that Buffalo really had control of that thing the whole way. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to put yourself in that situation at all.
Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic with us for a couple more minutes here on The Hoffman Show. Okay, so this Detroit offense, I mean, they're good at everything. The teams that have been able to at least slow them, it's the old Dan Patrick, you can't stop them, you can only hope to contain them.
Yeah, right.
How do you contain them?
Yeah, I think the one thing is you've got to be able to hang in with the run game on all downs and be ready for it on, you know, even on third and medium, third and short especially. But you've got to be able to tackle all 11. The safeties have to hit. The corners have to hit. The linebackers cannot miss fits. You know, it just, they do not give up on the run ever. They don't ever go away from it. They don't ever abandon it. The closest, again, was that Buffalo game where they got down like 20, it was down like three scores. And that's the only time they've really, if you get down even like 14 or 17, they're still going to bring it, you know, at you. So the physicality required to play them is at a pretty high level. And so far there's been very few teams that have been able to match it. And it takes a lot to do it, but you know, this is the playoffs and they do have Bobby Wagner. That's a guy that, you know, it's easy to follow him, and you can see this defense kind of taking on sort of his personnel. I love Sainer still. He was around here, obviously, at Michigan for a long time. So
right,
you can tell how the effort and everything they play with. But that's what it takes. You got to be willing to hit on first down and second down and be ready for it again on third.
Yeah, this is a team that's ready to hit, ready to properly fit a run. That's been a little bit more of an adventure this year.
Right.
Amon-Ra St. Brown's the best receiver on the team. Mm-hmm. But if you're game planning for this, do you have to more game plan for Jameson Williams because of the speed?
Absolutely, because St. Brown is one of those guys that I think is more or less going to get stuff no matter what happens. Like, it, you know, he could kill you, I guess, and, you know, you don't want him to have that, but he's probably going to end up with 8 or 9 catches to some degree, no matter what happens, because he's so good underneath. But Jameson is the guy that's the difference maker. Him and Laporta, I think, together have been a challenge for teams, because when the year started, so many teams fixed on Laporta, and Jameson just ran right by everybody for, you know, first 8 weeks, and then that slowed, and it's been a bit of a balance. But he has, you know, the real deal speed. He's changed his body. He's more physical. He's able to catch the ball now through traffic. Like, he has turned himself into a very, very good young receiver. And, you know, a guy who I think is probably a fringe Pro Bowler, quite frankly, this year. You know, a really good blocker, fit in with everything they were doing. So, yeah, he can do things that you can't teach. And Amon-Ra is a guy that you can sort of control. You can contain him, even if he has 8 or 9 catches. You can contain him to 70 yards. Jameson will... It takes a hiccup and it's over, you know what I mean? So he's like McLaurin, you know, but even faster in many ways.
Yeah, no, faster for sure. Terry might be a little bit more physical. Obviously, his contested catch ability is great, but Jameson doesn't have to deal with contested catches because he'll run right by him.
That's right, by everybody, yeah.
Nobody else in the picture. I'm on Raw on like third downs. That's the thing that scares the daylights out of me. And red zone, obviously, his precision is so good. Nick, this was great. Really appreciate it, sir. Enjoy the game this weekend, and we'll catch up down the line.
Absolutely, Craig. Take care.
Mike Mayock next on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And we're brought to you by the Maryland Vehicle Theft Prevention Council. Did you know a vehicle is stolen every 16 minutes in the state of Maryland? The key to preventing theft is in your hands. Lock your car, take your key, use an anti-theft device. Learn more about vehicle theft prevention at mdautotheft.org. Last week, Mike Mayock was calling the game for Westwood One, so we had him on the show on Friday. Commanders go out and get a win, and, well, this week, Mike Mayock's calling the game for Westwood One, so we figured we're not going to mess it up. We're not going to be the show that can be held responsible here, and thus, we welcome back Mike Mayock for the second straight week. Mike, how you doing, man?
Good, Craig. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Great to have you back on the show, and let's look back before we look ahead to this one. Jaden Daniels gets the ball back in his hands, 4:41 to go. He's got to kill the clock and then hand things off to Zane Gonzalez for a game-winning field goal. Being on the call with Jason and just describing that action and being in the stadium experiencing it, what was that like to see Jaden do that again as he has so often as of late?
Well, it was kind of a continuation of what we've seen here at the end of the season. And, you know, you start talking about historical ramifications when you're talking about winning 5 or 6 games with 10 seconds or less on the clock. I mean, and to have a rookie quarterback at the helm is, to me, mind-boggling. I'm an old guy. I've seen a lot of rookie quarterbacks. His composure is off the charts, and I think one thing that shouldn't go unsaid is that I think Dan Quinn does a great job with what he calls his winning moments. And really what that comes down to is situational football. And I think they practice situational football as much as any coach I've ever been around. I played for Bill Belichick, and that's what Bill was all about, is that when games were on the line, not only the coaches, but the players have to know what to do also. And I think that's something that I've seen with this Washington team. You know, the game on the line, they're not going to lose it. You're going to have to beat them. And this rookie quarterback's been phenomenal.
So, Mike, let me double-click on that for a second, because I think one of the things that's remarkable in talking to some of the guys this year after some of those wins, the home games that I'm able to be at and cover, is they'll somehow always seemingly say, oh, yeah, we practiced that exact thing earlier this week. Normally, we run the game winner against Philadelphia that Crowder catches. It's like, normally, when we run that play, it's for Ertz, but we got the same coverage in practice on Friday. And what I think is remarkable is situational football is this big, giant term that covers an endless possibility of situations. How do the best coaches, whether it be your experience with Belichick or what Dan's doing now, make sure that they're ready for the right situation, considering there's so many possibilities that can show up on a Sunday or, in this case, a Saturday night?
Yeah, and it's a great question, because it doesn't just happen on a Friday at practice when you go over situations. It's a year-long commitment to understanding better. And my dad was a coach. And what I learned from my dad is that it wasn't important what was in his head, what he understood. What was really important was what was in the player's head and how much of that he could convey to them And it was the same thing with Belichick. So really what happens is on a year-long basis, these guys get indoctrinated by the coaching staff into situations. For instance, there are a lot of different ways to do it. One of them is every week in the offseason and during the season, you sit down, and on one of the days, they're going to get up in front of you with film of what happened the week before around the NFL from an officiating standpoint. Okay, that's level number one. We want you to see this. Look what happened in this game. Did you guys know that on third down, this is when the clock stops or doesn't stop? And then to take it to another level, this officiating crew calls more holding penalties than anybody else in the league, more defensive pass interference, or less. You can get away with more holding on this crew. So as you go through it on a daily basis, you get all this feedback from your coaching staff, and you stay alive with what's going on around the league. And then you get into practices, and every day it's something different. Okay, we're on the minus 1 yard line. Okay, the next day it's defense. We've got a 2-point lead. Field goal can beat us. Minute and a half on the clock. Let's go. I could do this for half an hour with you, Greg, and talk about all these things. But the bottom line is these coaches, the good ones, and trust me, there are a lot of bad ones that don't do it. And you can look at clock management around the league.
For sure.
And it's awful at times. And the last thing is, Washington hired a guy named Dave Gardy,
yep,
who was in the league office, I don't know, the last 20 or 25 years. His dad was a coach. He knows the officiating piece of it better than anybody and is really good at situational football. And they brought him in full time just to keep them away. So I look at that proactively on Dan Quinn. How great is that of Dan Quinn to bring this guy in to help with situational football?
It's awesome. And Gardy does a meeting with them every single Friday, and Dan has referenced it a bunch of times this year as one of the key reasons why they're ready. But that was really, really insightful, Mike. Mike Mayock with us, analyst, of course, for Westwood One. He'll be on the call this weekend calling the game Commanders and Lions 8:15. If you're driving around, you can find it on the Odyssey app. All right, a couple other guys I wanted to ask you about in this game, Mike. Two guys from the same draft who have had very, very different careers. Dyami Brown is coming off arguably his best game as a pro. And what I think has really blown me away about his season is how they have found the correct way to use him. When coming out of North Carolina, it seemed like the Rivera administration here had a very different idea of who he was as a player. What have you made of what Dyami was his first 3 years and then how he has really flipped the script and become the bona fide number two wide receiver for Washington as they head into Detroit on Saturday?
For me, it's about two things. One is the coaching and the teaching, and his reputation coming out of North Carolina was kind of a speed guy, could beat you deep, long-legged guy, maybe not great in separation and short and intermediate and blah, blah, blah. But what I'm seeing is a guy breaking routes off now, coming back to the football, understanding how to set up a defender, using quickness and length as well as speed. And I find it interesting because I had the same questions. I was like, why is this guy coming on here at the end of the season? And I went through a bunch of the press conferences and stuff from Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury. And one of the comments, and I can't remember who, it might have been Cliff, but I can't remember. That question was asked, and he said he's become a professional. And to me, that's a key distinction. When I was a GM, that was a huge thing to me and our scouts and our coaches, is a guy going to be a true pro? Or are you going to spend an awful lot of time just getting them there on time and getting them out to the practice field? And when I hear a coach say, hey, he's become a true pro, that means he's doing all the little things. And to me, the combination of having some talent, which he does, he can run, he's got good hands, he can snap a route off, but it looks like he's really taken to the coaching and he's really taken to the fact that in this, his contract year, he needed to be a really good football player, and he's becoming that.
Yeah, I think Dyami's always been a good competitor, and I think he's always worked hard, but you got to know what to work on. And I feel like this staff has really guided him in the right way, and he's taken it to a whole new level. Of course, he is one of the guys that Amon-Ra St. Brown can rattle off as that guy was taken ahead of me, and I don't like that. What did you think of St. Brown coming out, and then what has he been able to do to become, you know, a top five, arguably, receiver in the entire NFL?
Yeah, I love this kid because he's as competitive as any football player I've ever met. I remember being at his pro day at USC, And I remember him being pissed off about whatever time it was he ran. And you remember, you know, he's a 6 foot, 200 pound guy. He wasn't going to run 4.3. So he doesn't have the length that most first round picks have. He didn't have the flat out speed that most first round picks had. But what he had in spades was an ability to run routes, an ability to be physical and tough through the ball, and an ability to separate, to understand how to separate both against man and zone. And I think that's an underutilized conversation about how wide receivers do or don't separate. And this kid has an innate feel for how to separate. And I think he had 115 catches. And I think he had an 81% hit rate on targets, which is just kind of mind-boggling and shows you how user-friendly he is to his quarterback.
Last thing for Mike Mayock here on the Hoffman Show. You're listening on the Team 980 or the free Odyssey app. You can also watch us on YouTube at the Team 980. Mike, of course, now with Westwood One, we'll call the game Saturday night. And one of the big questions, Mike, that Washington has spent the entire week figuring out on the defensive side of the ball is, what do we do with this Detroit offensive line? How do we get pressure against it? And maybe even more importantly, how do we stop the run? One of the best rushing attacks, especially with David Montgomery coming back to supplement what Jahmyr Gibbs is doing. If you're looking at this schematically, Washington has a lot of options. They play odd fronts. They play even fronts. They do all this kind of stuff. What can actually work to stifle Detroit up front?
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I think this Detroit offense is as good an offense as I've seen in years. They remind me a lot of that old fastest show on turf, the old Rams that won the Super Bowl years ago, because they're, you know, they had Marshall Faulk. Well, Jahmyr Gibbs is a dude. He is a flat out dude. And at wideouts, you know, they Jameson Williams, vertical guy. Amon-Ra St. Brown, first team all pro wideout. Sam Laporta, as good a tight end as there is in the game as far as a receiver. An offensive line that's really good. I mean, they got two all pros in that starting five. So I look at them, and I think what you have to do, and I mean what Washington has to do, is one of two things. Either you got to turn this game into a similar game as last week. And by that, I mean Washington's offense has got to grind it out. They had eight possessions. They did not punt. They did not turn it over. Five of the eight possessions, they had 10-plus snaps. And because of that, they ended up, Washington had, I think it was 69 offensive snaps to 44 for Tampa Bay. So at the end of the day, that's, I think, the most effective way to stop them is to grind it out, control the football, and don't let Jared Goff and that crew out in the field. Now, the second piece of that is if it turns into a little bit of a track meet, and it could, because Detroit's offense is that good. What do you want to take away? You know, I that's a really hard question, I think, for Dan and Joe Witt. What do you want to take away, and how are you going to do it? So I think the other thing is, if Detroit starts scoring, then you're going to have to see Jaden Daniels starting to get out of the pocket and challenging them both with throwing on the run and running on the run. And, you know, that's why Buffalo put 48 points on them, in addition to a bunch of injuries on defense. But I didn't directly answer your question as far as what your defense has to do. But I think a lot of it comes down to your offense.
No, I don't disagree.
And I loved how they kind of muddied the game last week. They turned it into a muddy, nasty game, and Washington won a low-scoring affair. If it's going to be a high-scoring affair, you got to win the turnover battle, and your quarterback has got to stand on his head. I mean, that's really what has to happen.
That feels like, to me, the choice I would make if I was Dan and Joe is, like, let's just not lose quickly. Because then there's no – if you give up the 70-yarder and you're going to play single coverage and bring Chin down in the box and do all that, then, like, if J-Mo gets loose and he scores, there's no more plays to make up for that. If I give up 12 yards a carry for three straight carries, I can still force an interception in the red zone. I can still punch a ball out. I can still bow up for a goal line stop and try to force a field goal. And that feels like the most – possible, like highest possible number of combinations where the game plays out that way and Washington wins. And then obviously your offense has to do their part. But that doesn't feel good either, because giving up, I think it's Detroit's averaging like 6.8 yards a carry against 11 personnel, or against nickel personnel. So there, right, there are no good options, Mike. I think you captured it well.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. The bottom line is they're the best option I've seen in years. You're going to struggle defensively to contain them. So you got to win turnover battles. Both head coaches are heavy on fourth down and being aggressive. And, you know, if Washington faked a punt or did something to try to steal a possession, it would not surprise me at all.
Love that. That's a good thing to watch or perhaps listen to. Mike Mayock will be on the call on Westwood One this weekend. And, Mike, if they win, if the Commanders pull this off, we'll talk to you next Friday. I think that's how this has to work now.
Except I won't have them next week. So, you know, you probably won't find.
We'll have to determine what the voodoo powers are and see if we have to talk to you anyway. Or we'll talk to your counterpart who will have the game. But Mike, nonetheless, we appreciate you the last 2 weeks. Thanks, dude. That's Mike Mayock with us here on the Hoffman Show. All right, when we get back, Mike just mentioned the fourth down stat or the fourth down factor in this. I have a stat on the Commanders and Lions on fourth down that will absolutely blow your mind next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. John Keim in 10 minutes. Yeah, I said it. The Godfather. John Keim in 10 minutes. Speaking of old friends from my days on the beat, Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones. He'll be on at 5:30. Logan talking offensive line play at 6:30. I mean, that is what football dreams are made of. Our pick six at six as well. But we got Max in the studio today for Anthony, who's wrapping up. Actually, I need to check in with Anthony and see how things are going at Flag Football Nationals. But I promised Max the people, and I promised you, and you're going to have to be the spokesperson for the people here, a stat on fourth downs for the Commanders and Lions that will absolutely blow your mind. So simply asked, Max, are you ready to have your mind blown?
Always.
Okay. So the Lions at plus 119.9% and Commanders plus 103.5% were the only two teams in the NFL to gain over a full game's worth of win probability added as a result of going for it on fourth down this season.
So Jack Fox and Tress Way are not going to see the field on tomorrow night.
I mean, I don't know if Jack Fox is the holder for Detroit as well, but yeah. I do think we underrated Tress's ability to get the ball down in that Tampa game, you know?
It's true.
Really critical.
Got reps.
Yeah. Otherwise, Marcus might have to do something other than, you know, convert fourth downs.
He might.
I mean, that is a wild statistic. So basically what that's saying is the Danalytics. Have you seen that one yet, by the way, Max?
Of course.
I saw that the other day and was like crying laughing. Danalytics going for it on fourth down bought the Commanders and Lions each accumulatively over the season an extra win. Like that is one, because they actually realize that the value of going for it on fourth downs is extraordinarily high. And I think the other side of it, if I'm going to full-on rant about this, I'm not really going to rant about it. If I'm going to full-on diatribe about this, is the downside of not getting it is overrated if you are prepared to do that. And I think at this point, both defenses know, like, hey, our coach is going to go for it. So we got to be ready just in case. But especially if you're smart with it. Like, I've said this all year. Ban 20-something yard field goals unless it is a game winner as time expires. If you are kicking a 22-yard field goal in the first quarter with, you know, 6 minutes to go, you're really screwing up. Because, well, yes, they could turn around and get a stop and then go on a 94-yard drive. The chances are that your defense is going to get a stop. Even if you give up a first down, you don't even have to go three and out. You could give up two first downs and still probably get the ball in decent field position. And if you actually get a three and out, or God forbid you get a safety or whatever, like a turnover, you're going to have amazing field position to then go back and attack again. And so the upside of going for it, even if you don't get it, there's an argument to be made there versus just kicking the field goal. Like, do you eventually get the touchdown? Probably. That is the value of going for it on fourth down. Now, you add in the second part of this stat, where overall the Commanders converted on 20 of 23 fourth down attempts this season. That's the regular season. Of course, they went 3 of 5 last week against Tampa. That's the highest conversion rate of any offense with at least 15 attempts since at least 1991. The Lions converted two-thirds of their fourth down attempts this season, going 22 of 33. And so when we talk about stealing possessions, I think, one, Washington going for it on fourth down and converting, that could be a way to do it. Can you get a fourth down stop? That would be, and especially like, can you get two of them? That's a way to steal a possession. Nevertheless, winning the turnover battles and all the things that we just talked about with Mike Mayock. Let's talk about more of it with John Keim next on The Hoffman Show.